Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I talk to singer-songwriter Junior Giscombe. I first probably stumbled across Junior's work. He's worked with Lynx and then through to his huge global hit, Mama Used to Say. And then we talk about that, and we move forward as well, and we talk about his time at school and how that made him very aware of ignorance and injustice, and how that shaped him into being somebody in the mid-80s, become a key member of the Red Wedge movement, which we talk about, that he was involved in with Paul Weller and Billy Bragg and Jimmy Somerville, Tom Robinson, etc. And we talk about that at length, and it's a really interesting natter. Junior obviously picked some incredible records, which you're going to hear us talk about shortly. Before we do that, a few thank yous. So thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. Thanks to you lot for continually supporting this and just being generally quite nice about the podcast, which is lovely. So thank you so much. If this is your first time checking out Off the Beaten Track, then when you get to the end of this lovely natter with Junior, go and explore the back catalogue, because it's a diverse bundle of chats. There's over 300, and you can hear me talking to artists such as, where do we go? The Foo Fighters, Fatboy Slim, Travis, Suede, gosh, who else? Lee John, we mentioned Lee in this. There's loads. Obviously, we spoke about Red Wedge. I spoke to Mick Talbot of the Style Council on here. Steve Craddock, that's in Paul Weller's band. Go and explore the back catalogue, because there's a big stack of ace chats to be listened to. If that's not enough and you need even more content, you can get that, and you can get that weekly. By that, I mean you can get access to 200 or so episodes that have never been released to the masses, video episodes, hundreds of radio shows, and that's all over on my Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. If I'm bamboozling you with information, your one-stop shop is www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. So that's not beaten, beatandtrackpodcast.com. If you go there, there's links to the Patreon, and there's links to all the different places you can listen to the podcast. There's links to all the social media. So if you're not following me on the socials, give us a follow, give us a like, a love, a share, a retweet, all of that stuff. Drop us a message. Always love to hear from you. And if you'd like to support the podcast, it works out about $1 a month. So 79p, and that'll give you access to hundreds more episodes that have never come out before. Right. I think I'm done with all that waffle, and we can get started now on some ace chat. And that comes courtesy of today's guest. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce the wonderful Junior Giscombe. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast, because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out. www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whippin. Okay, we are recording. Joining me today, Junior Giscombe, hello.
How you doing, mate?
I'm good. I really appreciate your time today, and I'm looking forward to talking records with you.
Yeah, man, definitely.
Well, before we get onto the track list, we're recording this on the 28th of July, and we're a week into coming out of lockdown with restrictions being dropped, and we're seeing a return of live music and nightclubs in various kind of levels of restriction. Just to sort of cast your mind back over the last sort of 16 months, Junior, like, how have you found it personally, and how have you found it creatively?
I think personally, it gave me time to stop and think. I go back and forth from England to Jamaica all the time, so you can get a wider kind of view of things. And I was in Jamaica at the time when the whole thing was, England was going to be locked down. So we rushed and came back to England and went straight into lockdown. So it was a complete, it's not that it was weird, but there was this thing that just went on for those first couple of weeks where you could see artists were putting lots of stuff up on your YouTubes, on Facebooks, Insta, and everybody was trying to keep relevant during a time whereby they didn't know what was happening. Nobody could gauge.
What, do you think it was a sort of knee-jerk?
Yeah. It really was, but it gave me the time to think, and it also gave me the time to get back into nature. It gave me the time to kind of like listen to the birds again, you know, and watch the rabbit run in the back garden and become his mate and can give him a nut and he'll come for it. It was that kind of thing for me. Stop. Instead of keep traveling and moving around and doing what you're doing, stop a minute, think a minute. I think that the whole thing put people into a state of fear and not really challenging anything anymore, just going along with things. That was strange to see from a generation who was striving to the change that we had become so succumbed to whatever was coming through. It was odd to watch at times. From a musical standpoint, creatively, it was great because of that time to think, because of that time to listen to music that you wanted to be involved in. A young French band called AP Connection, who do a disco-y jazz kind of vibe, which is very new, very fresh to me. And it was a challenge to write something to that kind of music. And it was brilliant. It's turned out great. But I was back into that challenge mode again. I was back into that. You've got to make something that's really good. You've got to come up with something. You've got to, the challenge within yourself all the time to make something better. Not even saying that it would be better for, put it this way, you want it to be better for your audience, and this time again gave you the time to listen to your music and be really objective.
Sure.
Opposed to just doing what you were doing and playing dates and doing this and making a record and then going there. So the 16 months overall has been, for me, I've lost people through this. So when I say this, it's not like if I'm trying to say, well, but for me, it's been a good period. It's been a very good period to sit, watch my fellow human beings and how we interact and where we are as human beings. So, yeah. And that was where it was when I first started as a kid. I had that time to be able to think through various things and look at it to be able to put a story to it, to be able to relate through what you're saying.
Definitely. And so I totally agree. And I've mentioned it a couple of times on this podcast, Junior. When we first went into lockdown, I run a nightclub. So, you know, it's been a strange time to get
you.
Through.
Yeah.
But I like to go for a run in the mornings. And normally I'm running where I live in Essex, which is polluted and overcrowded. And we're on flight paths and it's congested with traffic because I live right next to a huge shopping centre. And
right. When
we went into lockdown, I'd go for a run and there was no planes in the sky. There was no traffic on the roads. And the rabbits were all of a sudden running around the field again. And should you see someone else, that person was experiencing what I was experiencing, which was that lack of connection and communication with people because it had been taken. And so generally a runner will run past another runner and give you a little acknowledgement, but there was people walking dogs on the other side of the road, like waving, like, which doesn't happen where I live. And it was so lovely that it felt like the planet was resetting itself in a little way.
Setting itself.
And a little system restore, taking nothing away from the horrific, you know, things that so many people have experienced. But
agreed.
But to find the positives in it, which I think, you know, everybody has to do to get through it. You have to find the things that can help you process what's going on. And mine was very similar to yours. Like just having a little look around, the things that you don't generally get to stop and take stock of, you could. And I think, you know, that was a good place to kind of start. And then, you know, it's ups and downs for, I guess, everybody throughout the last sort of 16 months of thinking it was all over, thinking it's back out of lockdown, in lockdown. So fingers crossed we're in a place now where it's going to continue to remain positive. And,
I think that's where we have to be. I don't think we need to deal with the negative, because the negative is there. It's the pandemic. It's what's going on in terms of COVID. It's there. So we can't, none of us can turn around and say we disacknowledge the fact that there is something there.
Absolutely.
But if we allow that to become the driver then within our lives, most of us will continue to live in fear because it's easy to stir it up on all kinds of levels, right? And then somebody pours a bit of petrol on it and it just flames up. If we stick within with positive and we understand that, like, it's only the positive that's going to get all of us through this.
100%.
And that's what we focus on. Yes, this will happen. We've seen it. But we've got to focus on getting over that hump, not turning around and calling one another's names because of the fact of not doing what the government says you should do or shouldn't do. Not looking at people in that way. We are all human beings, first and foremost. And as I said, this time has truly honed that home to me on all levels. You know, when you look at various different countries, what's going on, the dividedness of it all and the divisiveness of it all towards our one another, which is a madness to me. Do you know? So being able to stop, breathe, look, stick with the positive, that's going on, yes, but I can try this and I can do this and try and continue to keep your mind positive as well, because there is so much negativity around.
And a tenuous link here, but I imagine one of the positives throughout the whole of this has been music. And so with that in mind, let's start your playlist, Junior. And for track one, mate, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
It's a song by Charlie Parker, and it's called Summertime.
So why did you choose that? Tell me. And was there any kind of contenders, or was it? And how did you approach this list as well? Was it like the first one that came into your mind? Because I'm fully aware that any day of the week you wake up and there could be seven completely different answers. You know, it's music. There's so much out there. But I just wondered how you approached this. And it's the intro one that most musicians find the hardest one to choose.
It was, because I could have chosen things that have flamboyant openings, right? And some jazz things that have incredible openings. But this song, when I was a kid, my dad used to put this track on. The opening of it just made me smile. And it was just the easiest one, because everything else would have been just to say, well, I know about arrangements here, so, you know, I'll give you this. And whereas with this is just, sometimes simplicity is beauty. And I think that that's what this is.
Wonderful. Wonderful. In regards to songwriting and intros, like, since your career in music began, and we look at to how people would listen to music then, where they would find their music, is very different to how people listen to music now.
Agreed.
And so with that in mind, when you approach songwriting now, do you consider the fact that we live in a time at the moment where a lot of people's attention spans are getting shorter? And, you know, we're seeing that pop records are becoming shorter. There's lots of start with a chorus, you know, and all of these kind of, I don't subscribe to it, but a kind of almost like a rule book of making a pop hit of, like, you know, what you need to do now, like it's a science. Like, is that something that you consider, or are you still about the feels?
It's got to be, for me, I'm still coming from how you feel. Music should be from how you feel. It was when the early 80s and everybody started to get the drum machine, right? Because Sly Stone had done, you know, Family Affair and used the 808, and everybody like, oh my God, I want that sound. So the drum machine started to give you a direct pattern, right? Like a metronome. So you were basically now singing to order without really understanding it. Whereas before you had your metronome, but the drummer may swing and the bass player goes with him. That's the beauty. And then they come back again. And there's that movement that just happened that you think, did that happen? No, it couldn't have happened. Because you leave it there and somebody else might listen to it. And they say it and you're around. And you know that, like, yeah, that was a good move there, Jim. You allow creativity to be.
Yeah.
I never from then, even though we use drum machines and live drummers and guitarists and whatever else, and you can use technology for all of that. And the technology, as I say, will give you a metronomic kind of sound, right? And it doesn't sound warm to me. It sounds harsh in terms of its sound. So, no, I have to stick with being a muser, making music with musicians, right, and creating something that's different, fresh, something that maybe may not fit the role of whatever, but is good. And that's all it's about.
Okay, I'm going to take you back for track two, Junior, and I'm going to ask you to tell me, please, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Well, that's a pretty easy one too. And that was because I've recorded it since. The Change Is Going to Come by Sam Cooke. You know, that song, I had a sister who lived in America, and she used to send over early Motown records, King records, Wilson Pickett stuff. And she sent this album. And my dad used to be able to make like sound systems and stuff, right? And we had one inside the house, and he put on that album. And that song came on, and I was sitting on the floor. I can remember it. I was sitting on the floor, I had my legs crossed and my hands in between. And as soon as it started, I just looked up and I didn't move. Did not move. Did not understand exactly what he was saying at the time. But as I grew, what a positive song. An incredibly positive human song. You know, and I just grew to love this song. It does something. Whoever sings it for me and has the presence in voice to make those words speak to us.
Yeah.
I'm down with you.
I mean, is there that many vocalists that can get anywhere near him?
No. I think, well, if you know about music in that sense, for the time that he was there, he was it. There was nobody else. There wasn't, you know, people say Elvis and whatever else, but they forget what Sam did, what he achieved in the time that he was doing what he was doing. The mindset of coming from the gospel and having that huge gospel audience in the very beginning, and then to turn and say, right, I'm going to start making records like this, and still manage to hold on to those people through the message that he would put across. Man was a champion, man.
Absolutely.
He was brilliant.
And I mean, if you've got a voice like that and you look like Sam Cooke, you've got to be a superstar. He was a beautiful man, wasn't he? And it was like, you're going to live a charmed life if you can sing like that and you look like that.
You can do all of that.
Oh, wonderful. Am I right in thinking, was Linda Womack related to Sam Cooke? I think.
Yeah. Now, Linda Womack is married to... Linda Womack is Sam's daughter.
Right.
Sam Cooke's daughter.
I thought so.
Right. She's married to Bobby Womack's brother.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, there's a talented bunch there, right?
Oh.
I remember...
Come on, again.
I was probably about 12 when I discovered Sam Cooke, and it was when... in the kind of mid-80s, I think, the Levi's advert and the reissue of Wonderful World. And
Wonderful World.
And then hearing Cupid in a film.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got bought... I think the album's been deleted since. I got bought the double album called The Man and His Music, and it was a gatefold.
Man and His Music. Yeah, gatefold.
Yeah.
Right? Blue, red.
That's it.
It's Sam's name in red, and the background was blue. I've still got it.
So have I. And it's really weird now because I remember on Christmas Day, I said to my parents, I'm going to go upstairs and listen to this. And I just spent all Christmas Day listening to Sam Cooke and him just blowing my mind. And then I remember, because it was gatefold, it had all this information in it, and there was pictures of, like, one of the Womacks, and there was pictures of him with Muhammad Ali, and it was just this all this information about him. And you realise, like... And then, at that point, I probably didn't realise the significance of the lyrics of Change Is Gonna Come. And, like...
Yeah,
and then as you mature and, you then start to understand what that's about and the time that was written in, it just... It takes that song to a completely different level. It's
different place, yeah.
Incredible.
That's, you know, that was why It was easy for me because it was that song at that time. There was things coming through, if you get, remember, just after Sam, you'd go into like Curtis Mayfield and stuff like that, right? Which was dealing with what was happening in Vietnam, right? And giving you information about that. So we were hearing about, we didn't have internet, as you know, that we didn't have all of these different technologies. But we were hearing through the people that we loved their music. They were actually speaking to us and telling us and talking to us and informing us. And we were taking it on, you know, into Bob Marley, into Gil Scott Heron, into, you know, Lost Poets, into, they were talking to us, that James Brown was talking to us, right? Whereas today, not in the same, it wouldn't be in the same way. But it's like, you're not really talking to us. And that's all of us. Marvin Gaye didn't speak to 19-year-olds when he did What Was Going On. There was 35 and 55-year-olds who could understand perfectly what was being said in that song, in that complete project.
And that's, you know, that's something that I think, I mean, I'm What's Going On is probably my favourite ever album. Like, I think that is an absolute masterpiece of a record. And I love all of Marvin Gaye's work, but what you touched upon about the constrictions and the sound of a drum machine in the 808, and to use Sexual Healing as an example, like, a great record, amazing record.
Of course.
It's no What's Going On. Yeah. It hasn't got that vibe that...
No,
and it's, yeah, it's really strange. And you look at, and it's definitely some things age, like, don't age as well through, because the technology dates. And I grew up in an era of, you know, in the mid to late 80s of, you know, when I hit my teens, it was Alex.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Alexander O'Neill, Luther Vandross, and lots of that kind of sort of soul scene that was coming over to the UK. And I look back in retrospect now, and I listen to the Never Too Much album, and I think it's incredible. Right. But then when I listen to the Gimme the Reason album, which is all electronic drums, it hasn't... the songs are still great, but the production kind of hasn't held
you
up.
You lose it. Yeah. You lose it.
You know what I'm saying?
Because I do. It's you're modernising it, right? But into a time frame, whereas you made it out of step.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying is, right? We started out making records, right, with a band, going in, rehearsed for 2 weeks. We went in the studio, and that was it. We made an album within a week. We had 1 week to do it, and we made the album. That's how we were doing what we were doing, right, when we made the first album. When we got to the second album, technology started creeping in, so the war started happening. I don't want it, they want it, because they want it to sound like... So you're fighting. Now you're making records which is using the technology, but you're experimenting with it. You're not really... able to get the true vibe and the true sound and the true what you're after within what you're building. It goes on. A lot of American music was coming through during that late 70s, early 80s, that was beginning to have the drum machines as focus. By 81, 82, right, that was it. Drum machines was running, you know, with the what was going on in pop music at the time, with all the electrics that was going on and, you know, I'm Only Human and all that kind of stuff, that kind of jam and Lewis, then LA and Face, you know, they perpetuated that whole vibe, you know, and Teddy was right in the middle of it, you know, doing the story of the whole thing. So these three entities made it that, like, that regimented style of music became the style that became popular, became the style that became what they do right now with your Justin Bieber's and all of those kind of artists. It's still playing with drummer and drum machine to try and ensure that it stays current. But if they were making music out of step, it would always be current. Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life wasn't in step. It was out of step. But look how long that's lasted as a piece of music. You know what I'm saying, mate? So it's not always good to be on board of what is the current vibe, what is the current lick right now. That makes you pretty much like any other artist playing along, just like the drum machine.
I think
there's no discussion.
I think someone said to me once that the idea of a pair of jeans, you can have skinny jeans, they'll be in fashion, then you can have flares, they'll be in fashion, then you can have bootcut jeans, they'll be in fashion. A pair of 501s will always be stylish, and style will always outdo fashion. Fashions come and go, but style's a constant. And it's like,
style is constant. It never moves, right? Why should it?
Absolutely.
It knows itself. It knows itself. It doesn't need, you don't need to run it anywhere. It knows itself.
All right.
Right? And that's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor, Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Well, let's go back to a time when I imagine everybody was wearing clothes that they'd look back and wince at now, and that's school. And for track three, Junior, I'm going to ask you for the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, mate.
I had to go right back for this one and smile to myself as well. The Beatles. Money can't buy me love, can't buy me love. Oh, everybody tell me so. Love that tune, love that tune.
And what a tune.
Come on. Right, I mean, early 60s, right? I'm like maybe eight or something like that. Nine, I'm going to primary school. You got Luxembourg playing. Right, you had your early kind of BBC radio, no capital radio. You had to go all the way down on the right-hand side of the dial to try and get a station that played R&B music. Otherwise, everything that you was hearing was pop.
Yeah.
So yeah. The Cilla Blacks, the Jets, the all of that glam rock thing that came on after the Beatles and stuff. You know, Jerry and the Pacemakers, all of that stuff. You were hearing, you know, that was the music of the times. You know, you go into school and you stand on the little bench, me and three other guys, and we'd be like imitating the Beatles and singing, and Money Can't Buy Me Love to these girls who are imitating screaming girls because we're kids, you know what I'm saying? We were just watching what we're watching on TV. And it was hilarious, man, when you look back at it, you know? Brilliant. But it was such a great record to define that kind of time for me.
Where was school, Junior? And did you enjoy it?
School was in South London, in Clapham South. They call it Clam nowadays. It's become very, well, it was, but it was a very upmarket place. And I was there. I lived in Clapham till I was 21. And then we moved to Fulton Heath. And then from Fulton Heath, I went to Mitcham. And then was out in Mitcham. But those first 21 years of my life in Clapham were just defining bits of me. It really was. And, school was interesting, very interesting. Again, when you look back at it, right, and you can smile now. At the time, you weren't smiling, right? You know, the injustices that was going on, because you're just coming out of the 60s, we're first generation kids, black kids coming in. We're going to school, we're born in England. So, you know, the whole thing, we couldn't speak West Indian in the house because our parents wouldn't allow us because we were English. We were born in England, you know, and we had to move. We had to do this. We had to set things in motion, move things forward. They'd come. They'd been so fortunate with their lives to be able to get somewhere to live, bring up their kids, send them to school. The whole thing was about education. So the times that we were living in, that whole, what was going on with civil rights in America, what was going on in Rhodesia with Ian Smith, and you then are going to a school which only had, like, say, 5 black kids in it. So, again, you're being taught to assimilate to, opposed to dealing with you as an individual in the same way you would any other child within the school. You know, silly things like at the time they had lice was the big thing. And they used to have a little cup and it would have some green stuff in it. And teddy boy cones, which was the little metal cones. And in those days, right, you know, you're a black kid and your hair's growing and they're pulling this thing through your hair and you're winching, right? You're winching and you're going like this and they're slapping your hands, get it away, and they're still pulling it through, you know? So it seemed like not understanding, not knowing, not taking a moment to look at that person. So you saw things as a kid growing up that made you not want to fall in line with that. You wanted to be basically out of step because that you're showing me hurts me. And I'm telling you it's hurting me. And you still want to do it tomorrow and the day after, but I'm telling you it hurts. So you're not really taking on board what I'm saying. You might be hearing it, but you're not really taking it on board. So if I'm out of step with you, instead of going to take that thing, right, if I'm out of step with you until you understand that you need another cone, that's all. One that works with black people's hair. That's all. It's a cone. But to be arrogant enough to feel that even though you see the pain in the child's face, that you're going to do exactly the same thing tomorrow and the day after. So you start learning early that there is injustice, imbalance going on. And then your music that you're hearing, right, and you're growing up in, comes from the blues. Because all of the pop things that I was hearing during that period of time, all of those artists, they were listening to the blues. So it was their way of doing the blues, the way that the Stones do, right? You know, it was just an interpretation in the same way as it has become in today's music, an interpretation of what is real, not what is real. And what is real, it's like you and I spoke about the loofahs and stuff. If we look at Luther's voice in terms of what we heard, immaculate. For what Luther did, immaculate. You listen to Stevie Wonder's voice, I would turn and put a Dusty Springfield there myself, right? You get what I'm dealing with, right? Voices, things that touched you, that made you opposed to a beat alone. Because if instrumentals was what it was all about, then we'd be hearing more instrumentals than we would be hearing vocal tracks. So we know it's not that. As much as people will enjoy instrumentals, I do, right? But at the same time, no.
Just to touch on the ignorance and the injustice that, you know, you was aware of and was exposed to and a victim of growing up as a young boy, do you think that was starting to kind of shape your mindset and the music you was listening to, you know, echoing the situation that, you know, you could relate to? Do you think these things all kind of went in the melting pot of your stance on politics that would later, you know, see you working with Weller and the Reb Wedge movement and to kind of, and with Billy to try and sort of progress things? Was that something that you felt, here's an opportunity now where I can move things and be more progressive and vocal about my thoughts and beliefs on injustice?
I think at that time, nobody was saying anything. And I had just come back from America at that time and seen, been able to go around with various artists as well, who would show me various things and what they were doing and how they were helping and what they were putting into, what they were trying to do for their communities. And I came back and I was like, I've got to speak about where I'm coming from, right? I've got to be, and I've got to try and show that it's possible. You can have a successful career and at the same time say it as you see it, not how it will relate so that you sell more records, but say it how you see it. So I did a thing in the Times, an interview in the Times, and said that, you know, Britain was institutionally racist. And the Times, what do you mean institutionally racist? So I broke it down, right, and said that, like, you know, it's not the common man that is institutionally racist. That's been given to him from up high in terms of the liberty given. If you're not prepared to see it for what it is, then you can't change it. It will always be just some guy who comes out, says something, press polarize on it for 2 minutes, and then they're gone. Means nothing. So being involved, being able to do what the three of us did when we put that whole Reb Wedge thing together was incredibly important to me at that time. Because it was, you're selling records to people who are like you, and you need to show them that this is possible, right? You can make a stance. You can deliver a message to us all that's important, that we don't fall into the line of running down somebody's line, but we continue to keep our minds open to all kinds of things. Don't close yourself off. Anything in life is possible. If you aren't going to get what you need from central government, then look to work within your own inner city so that you can build the community to trust whoever it is that's there is actually going to get the money and plow it back into.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The community. So understand that person first and foremost. Because that's the one who's going to push the money through and do the right things within your community. So it was me trying to say, and still would say, was saying at that time and saying the same thing. We were talking about positivity. Well, I've always been that way, positive. My parents, as much as they love music and stuff like that, they knew where they came from. So my mom came from being a Garveyite, Marcus Garvey, who basically was an incredible man and said incredible things, did the Black Star Liner and stuff like this. But my mum used to be a Garveyite, so she understood where she came from. And she instilled that within us. So it wasn't like if you felt like you had to brace back, we would say. We were always very much, as a family, me and my brothers and sisters, we all very much stand firm. Again, going against the grain, you're supposed to go back. We're not going back. It can only move forward. So that was how I saw that whole thing with Red Wedge, was to open up to the kids and say, right, I want every politician there is within this borough, in this auditorium, in this theatre. I want them to give out their rhetoric so that these kids can read what they're all saying, and stop deciding your movements based on a party that's bigger than another party or this one. You can actually make a very small party incredibly big by being able to work within your area. We've lost community. People actually looking out for one another. This is what the pandemic actually gave us back. Right? The fact of looking out for your neighbour, right? And actually seeing that person and saying, what's happening? And they say the same thing and you move on. But you are looking out for the people around you. And that was what Red Wedge was. We were looking to ensure that young people started to look at politics a bit deeper, just a little bit more, you know, and understood that they can make a change. It's not, you know, it's not that it's impossible. It's just by not being susceptible all the time.
Absolutely. For track four, Junior, I'm going to ask you for the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please.
Right. Well, for me, it was Grover Washington Jr. It was an album called Inner City Blues. And there was a shop in South London, in Balham. And this shop, everybody used to go there from South London. You get all the imports and stuff that was coming in from America. And you had a little booth in those days where you'd go into, and the guy would play the record and you'd listen to it in the booth. And I heard Grover Washington play that sax, and it was, £4.25 for that album on import. And I had £4.50, and I was going to go out that night, right, you know. But it was a toss-up, and the album won. And that was it, mate. I stayed in. But that was the very first album that I ever paid money for and bought.
Wonderful. Well, let's move forward for track five. And that's going to be the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Right. That was me. That was me basically being a sound boy back in those days, because you're coming out now and you're going more into your own. I went to grammar school up until I was 13, 14. So the school I went to, there was only me, Mark, about four or five of us as black guys in the school. We were the first school in South London to do that whole transformation thing, where it was now going to go into being a comprehensive. So you were putting grammar schools with comprehensive schools anyway, but you were amalgamating them. And we went to a school in the end, it was called Henry Thornton, right? So it became the first comprehensive school, about 1,500 kids in the school at that time, you know, it was a big thing. And by the time I got to my third year, and the two schools that we amalgamated with came from Kennington, and both of them came up, these schools, and it was primarily black kids. So for the first time, right, I was in a school that was now balanced out and was more even, right, for the last 2 years of my schooling. And that was an incredibly good time, right, because everybody was just like one. There was no more this feeling of one being, everybody was one. And that school, I have to give it to them, right? The teachers and the way that the kids were, mindset-wise, it's fantastic, man. Fantastic. So it was getting to that age, getting to sound system boy, Coxon, Duke Reed, Shelley, Count Shelley. These were Sofonso, these sounds where they string up in a club with the huge boxes, right? And they'd hold a dance, you know, and that dance would go on from maybe 7 till 2 in the morning and whatever else. And they're playing reggae, but if they played a soul tune, you knew that that soul tune's going to be massive, because the reggae man don't play soul, you know what I'm saying, back in them days. So it was... that was me. That was me between that 14, I'd say, to 19 period of music. That was like, that was what was taking me on. That was what was moving.
And what specific track would you pick?
For me, it was "Do You Remember the Days of Slavery" by Burning Spear.
What a tune!
Bad tune, man.
Takes
you right back.
Well, I'm going to take you home for track six, and Junior, I'm going to ask you for a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Well, this is Skinhead Moonstomp, right? This tune, the lead singer used to come to my mum and dad's house, and upstairs we had an opening, and his band used to rehearse because they were friends of my brother's. And the band rehearsed, so I got to know Roy really well. He was like another brother.
What was his second name?
Was it Bailey? Was it
Roy or Bailey? Was it Ellis?
Ellis. Roy Ellis. Roy Ellis.
Yeah, his son went to my school.
Get out. Get out. Wait. What? I spoke to Roy about four years ago now. Right, the last time he and I spoke. But yeah, he was from the manor. My mum and dad took him in, basically. And Roy had the band, and they just used to rehearse upstairs, as well as there was another band called Simande as well. And they used to do the same thing and rehearse at the house. That's so, again, getting into music and whatever else. But Roy used to jump up and down, you know, and do this skinhead thing, right? And when he made the record and I heard it for the first time on the radio, I couldn't believe it. I was, you know, you turned it right up. He's like, yeah. Oh, mate, I was off. Go with it. I think all of that made me really enthusiastic about being in music and that fun, watching them rehearse. And then when they played live and the energy and the audience and all of that stuff, you just, like, I suppose I just got blinded by all of that.
Yeah.
Wow, I want to do this. I want to do this.
It's so weird because, like, when I first started secondary school, like, again, it wasn't a very multicultural school in Essex at the time, and Roy's son was probably about 3 or 4 years older than me, and this is at a time when hip hop had just happened. It was just happening, like the electro albums were out, and there was this kid that was Roy's son, and he could break dance. He was like, everybody would go and watch him break dance. Not just that, he was also one of the best graffiti artists as well. And then fast forward a few years, he was involved in maybe probably not the most legal of radio stations at the time, but it was a vital station for where we grew up. And I just think it's incredible that creativity, the bones of it, definitely transcends through generations. And like, no one else at my school, you know, would step up and do what he done, and he done it. Right. And it was like, to this day, you know, we see him about, and it's just like, just, I'll always go, I won't even probably mention who his dad was. I go, that guy there, literally one of my first days at school, I was like, who's that guy? Like the confidence and the coolness, and he was just an absolute dude. And then to see him like pioneer a scene, really, where we grew up with radio was I think it's just brilliant that if you've got them creative bones and you can get fed through to the next generation.
And it passes down. It's, you know, it might not be in the same way. I have a daughter who does publishing and stuff, and you know, that's like passed down, if you get what I'm saying. You know, it's like you dad, blah blah blah, yes, but this, you know. And it's nice because it's the other side of what I do, if you get what I'm saying. It's not the creative side, but it's creative in its own way. Right, and she has to be. And you know, so yeah, you do remember those people too, people who it's like they just step up. They came in, they're different.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? They just came into this whole thing different. And you remember them. You know, I remember being a kid and we had, what was it, Saturday morning. They used to do these little cartoons of the Jacksons and the Osmonds, right? And everybody knew that the Jacksons one was better than the Osmonds. Right, so that was no, but the way that it would always be projected to you is like the Osmonds one, you're not focusing correctly. But actually, the Jacksons one, it didn't have nobody cared about no color with the Jacksons one. That was just a great little cartoon, that we used to watch on a Saturday morning, right? But you could see even from then a push towards, it being about not the cartoon. Yeah. But about the colour of a man's skin. So you started, like, you know, you're young and you're looking at this and you're like, are we all watching the same thing? And everybody's like tuned off by that time. They're not bothered. But I was like, no, this, as you said, that whole journey of moving all the way along, going to Red Wedge, being involved in all of that, going to the Houses of Parliament, understanding some of that. You had, in my mind, you had no choice. You were in that position. You were in the out of step. Your record was a hit in America, in France, in Germany. So you weren't reliant only on the UK for your success. So you could say what you want and bounce. Do you know what I'm saying, right? And I just wanted to ensure that while I was here, I was saying something, opposed to just being somebody who made a record. We all, many people.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. Made a record. I wanted to make a record. I wanted to have something that would stand. I wanted to do work that would stand within the industry that I chose to be a part of. You know, and that to me was the driving force.
For the last track, you get to play Tastemaker Junior and DJ, and I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
This song is by Quincy Jones, and it's called "If I Ever Lose This Heaven."
Tell me about it. What can people expect from it, Junior?
Jazz, great harmonies, a song that will melt you and make you smile at the same time. One that you can be sitting down with your coffee and your biscuit with and you can just chill. Or one you're, if you still read books, which I do, if you just chill with a nice book and put this on, right? I think you'll be wavering between what you're reading and what you're hearing. And trust me, it will pull you to one side. That's what this song does.
Lovely. Did you did you get to see the Quincy Jones documentary that came out a couple of years ago? Oh, my God, that's incredible.
The Quincy is a monster. He's a monster. Come on. Come on. The work. The body of work, the people he's worked with, you know, the different artists in different genres and different styles and classical arrangements and, you know, to the Michael Jackson Bad, to the Michael Jackson Thriller, to be able to walk that kind of journey just must be from bebop all the way through. Jesus Christ, man, the guy's a monster. Nothing like it.
Absolutely.
Nothing like it.
Well, as we mentioned at the beginning, Junior, we're on our way out of lockdown now. We're starting to get back into being able to go to gigs and clubs and restaurants and start to reconnect with our friends and be able to hug them and, you know, and with a positive attitude to you know, looking forwards. What are you looking forward to from the rest of 2021 personally, and what is going to be happening professionally?
Personally, seeing people again, just seeing people again and seeing people smiling and being a part of something, a show, an event. I missed that, really did. It's the interaction with people, you know. So I'm looking forward to being able to do that more, right? From a professional standpoint, I have a record that will be coming out pretty soon, the Redirection, Rediscover album, which is a collection of 80s albums, well, 80s artists, should I say, from a Kiki D to a Lee John, to a Sunita, to a Kim Mazel, to a Won Chung, real diverse album, which I'm not going to say too much about, but I think a lot of people, when they hear this album, are going to say, nah, this Remember I was saying about being able to step back off of it and bring something fresh to the table? That's what this album is.
Amazing.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
And Junior, if people want to keep up to speed with that and everything else that you're up to, where's the best place to stay up to speed on you?
Well, you can get me on juniorgiscombe.co.uk, which is my website. You can get me there. You can get me on Facebook, Junior Giscombe, Instagram, same thing. And that's it, really.
Well, if it's all right with you, when I put this out, when I put it up onto to Facebook and Instagram, if it's cool with you to tag you in it, so if people aren't following you already, then they can go and explore the world that is Junior Giscombe.
No problem.
Mate, you've been an absolute delight, and I've been so thrilled to get to talk records with you, Junior. Thank you so much, mate.
It's a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, man.
Thank you. There you go. Junior Giscombe. Oh, what an absolutely lovely gentleman. We carried on chatting afterwards for 10 minutes or so, which is always a great sign. And I could have spoke to Junior for hours. You know, you can just tell, you know, a good soul and somebody that was, you know, really open and honest and positive. And we need that. We need that now more than ever. I hope you enjoyed that chat. I hope you got a fraction of the, you know, just a fraction of the joy that I got from having that. Then I guarantee that would have meant you still had a lovely, lovely time. So thanks again to Junior. Thanks to you lot for listening and supporting this podcast. As mentioned at the beginning, go get stuck into the back catalogue. A lot of the artists that we mentioned in this chat, go and have a rummage in the archives, because I'd say a few of them have probably been on the podcast. And I'll be back next time. In the meantime, everything else you need to know, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Be excellent to each other. Stay safe and love you lots. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.